Robert Cafaro played with the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra and was a member of the Baltimore Symphony before joining the Philadelphia Orchestra in 1985.
This is one amazing man. Wait till you hear. He's an avid soloist and chamber musician, has performed recitals and appeared as a soloist in major cities around the world. An active teacher as well, Mr. Cafaro has been on the cello factory.
It's a factory there at the University of Virginia.
Faculty of the University of Virginia, the Philadelphia College of Bible, the College of New Jersey, where my daughter teaches, at the Hartwick Summer Music Festival in Oneonta, New York, Strings International, and the Summer Strings Seminar in Rhinebeck, New York.
He's been a member of the Rachmaninoff Trio since 2003, and he joins us now. Robert Cafaro, welcome to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
I'm sorry, Bob, but you have a tremendous story to tell. You're writing a book. It's almost out now.
I've actually finished the book, and I'm working with a professional editor now. And when I gave her the manuscript, she said I had two choices. She could correct the grammatical errors, and I could publish a book, or she feels that with some reworking, I could publish the book, and she feels it's likely going to be a bestseller.
So. No, it's an amazing story because you had a very, very serious disease, which is usually progressive, and you turned it around. You want to tell us about it?
Sure. In December of 1998, I had just turned 40. I got this mysterious, unexplained numbness in my right leg. I didn't think anything of it. You know, was told by two doctors it was probably a pinched nerve. In 3 months later, in February, I started to lose the vision in my left eye, peripheral vision loss, which is optic neuritis. And at that point, I was given my first diagnosis of multiple sclerosis. I didn't want to believe it, but then in July of 1999, I got my third attack, and things went really downhill. I ended up being hospitalized. I was blind in both eyes. I could hardly move my hands. I could hardly walk, and I was told I'd be on permanent disability.
How old were you then?
I was 40 years old.
And you were already a top cellist.
Sure, yeah. I had been in the orchestra, you know, since 1985, and at that point I had a complete set of MRIs done, and I had over 50 lesions in my brain. My spinal cord had a lesion that was 3.5 centimeters long. It was just, it did not look good at all, and... when I was told I'd be in permanent disability, I just decided that was it. I set out to find things that neurology and medicine had overlooked.
And you found them.
Yeah, I basically cured myself. And 2 years ago, I had a complete set of MRIs of my spinal cord and my brain, and everything's completely clear.
That's unbelievable. But why isn't everybody doing that? I mean, it's crazy.
Because I was not in a fight against the disease. I was in a fight for my life, and I was not going to lose this fight. Yeah. So I've detailed all of this in the book, everything from diet, following people who've done things that are humanly impossible. So,
wow. What about your profession's role in recovery?
That was very difficult because I came back to the orchestra 6 weeks after I was told I'd be on permanent disability, and I couldn't see the music, I couldn't move my hands, and I actually mimed it for probably the first 4 to 6 months in the orchestra.
What do you mean, mimed it?
Meaning I was literally a mime cellist, so I was just going through the motions. I couldn't effectively move my hands. I couldn't even line my fingers up on one string.
And you felt it was important to do that to be able to bring yourself back to a point where you could play.
Absolutely, to not give in, mm-hmm. You know, and that the attitude. In other words, one of the things that I found was the disproportionately high success rate of multiple sclerosis in the placebo groups, mm-hmm. of clinical trial studies. So one of the things I set out to learn was the placebo effect. And I think that's one of the things I've effectively done. And I've illustrated this in the book.
Just to get that straight, the placebo, well, usually they give medicines and then they don't give medicines to the other people in the blind, you know.
Right, the double-controlled blind studies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you found, this is fascinating, that the people who often had the placebo, the sugar pill, did just as well as the others, and you wondered why that happened.
Sure, absolutely. If you look at Rogaine or minoxidil,
sure.
When they did the clinical trial study, 18% of the men in the placebo group started growing hair where they didn't have it. So I'm not exaggerating. So how would you explain that?
Yeah.
So the point is that, and I've followed people who did things that are humanly impossible, that if you put these people in clinical trial studies, these people would get better. If you know, in 1972, a rugby team crashed in the Andes Mountains of South America. So I've become actually good friends with Nando Parado, and he's a person that should not have done what he did. It's not humanly possible, and he's actually going to write the introduction of my book. And if you put him in a clinical trial study in the placebo group, he's one of those people that would get better.
Has it helped you with your music or hurt you with your music?
Absolutely, because having overcome an incurable disease, my neurologist, when he looked at my MRIs 2 years ago, he said to me, "You did the impossible." So that really was a confidence booster, making me believe that I could do anything I put my mind to, including get my cello playing back. So,
do you remember when you stopped being blind?
It was a very gradual, it was probably a very difficult 2 year recovery.
Yeah.
And my vision started slowly improving, but you know, learning the placebo effect was something that helped regenerate, you know, the optic nerves, the, you know, the plasticity, the pathways to the muscles, because everything's come back.
That's incredible.
So where are you now in follow-up and keeping on top of the illness?
Basically, the illness is, it's not there anymore. So this, you know, I'm actually going to ride the MS-150 this year, and I'm in training for it now. So this morning, on 7:30 this morning, I was on the bike. I did 19 and a half miles. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the MS-150, just for those of us who are ignorant,
So it's an annual ride they do. It's a fundraiser for the MS Society.
Oh,
I see. It goes from Cherry Hill, New Jersey, out to Ocean City. It's 75 miles each way, and you do that round trip.
I take it you don't take steroids.
I don't take any medication at all.
Okay,
so
great.
I'm on no medication. So
is there a fear that it'll come back?
No, because I feel that this disease is free to do exactly what I tell it. So it's basically I'm in control now, and I don't think it's gone. I know it's gone. Therefore, I know it won't come back.
Who's the greatest musician who ever lived?
Well, as far as composers, I would say it would be Johann Sebastian Bach.
I am very surprised by that answer. Yeah.
And as far as instrumentalists, I would say Jascha Heifetz.
Really?
Is probably the greatest instrumentalist. And he's actually a chapter in the book, because he did something that's relatively humanly impossible, because you've had people play at his level for a short time, but not for 60 years.
Yeah, yeah.
He kept up that incomparable level of playing for 60 years.
What other musicians have done? It's a very interesting question. What other musicians have done what you've done in your life that have come back from something serious?
Well, the first person that comes to mind is Jacqueline Dupre. And that was my only knowledge of multiple sclerosis. It was the only thing I knew about it.
Yeah.
And I was determined not to wind up like that, you know, because it's unfortunate. She was so brilliant, and that disease was so ruthless, and it took her out so hard.
Wow.
So should we talk about...
Sure. Talk about whatever you like.
Yeah. So
what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
I think you want to talk about why you're here, right?
Exactly. I thought we'd say a few words about that. So I started cello in the public school at age 9, and I picked it up pretty quickly, but I was never really serious about it. And in 7th grade, I got serious about the guitar, and I actually played... Within a short time, I was lead guitarist in several rock bands, and this was coming up to before my senior year in high school. I received a letter in the mail from the New York State, this would have been the School of Orchestral Studies, inviting me to come and audition. So here I had stayed with the cello, basically at my mother's insistence, and I came and auditioned for this program, the School of Orchestral Studies, and I got in, and it was a summer that changed my life.
Yes.
And I took lessons with the orchestra's former principal cellist, Bill Stoking, who recently passed away, unfortunately. And it was a summer that changed my life. I went back home. I auditioned for Juilliard Pre-College. I got in, and then I went to the Juilliard School. And basically, I always feel so indebted and grateful to Saratoga. And it's, you know, I've been to many, many places in the world, some of the most beautiful places on the planet. And I have to say, Saratoga is probably my favorite. So for me to be here is like giving a caveman a Bic lighter. It's just, I cannot begin to illustrate how much I enjoy this place and how much it means to me and all the great memories.
I've been here for 3 decades.
Yeah, this is. I'm now finishing my 30th year in the orchestra. And
that's great.
I did miss one season in 1999 when I was very, very sick. I was hospitalized, and that still haunts me. That to this day, that I missed Saratoga for 3 weeks that year. So this is my 29th season as a member of the orchestra, but it's my 30th year with the orchestra. So.
Well, pretty great. Robert Cafaro is a cellist with the Philadelphia Orchestra. An amazing story. Robert, we thank you very much for sharing it with us. We thank you so much for taking the time. We'll get you down to rehearsal. I know there's people ready to whisk you away, so we'll let you do that, and we thank you so much for taking the time out.
Thank you for having me.
A great pleasure. You can find out more about SPAC and about the Philadelphia Orchestra by going to SPAC.org. You're listening to the Roundtables live broadcast from SPAC on WAMC. Thank you.